Quick note before we get over to the show for today, and we have a really fun one ahead of you. Pete and I got into all kinds of stuff and did a lot of laughing in this one, so you're really going to enjoy it. But I hopped on Locked On Dodgers with our friends over there to talk about the Lakers, the Dodgers, the relationship between the two teams, being a fan in the city, all kinds of stuff. It was a great conversation that I had with Snydog over there, and it was a blast, and we're probably going to do that a couple times over the course of the season. So if you guys are Dodgers fans, make sure you guys go out and check out Locked On Dodgers. Again, that's Locked On Dodgers. You can find it everywhere you find my podcast. Check it out. It was a lot of fun. Now let's get to the show. To the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, I think I want to take the show off, load manage myself. where do you come down on that conversation?
I think it's smart in the Clippers case anyway. Mm-hmm. Clippers are good. Like, you know, we can get our shots in and, you know, crack on Kawhi and the load management and whatnot. If the Clippers are healthy, like, I've been having some soul searching on what this season is and what I think it is. Like, you know, you go into something expecting one thing, mm-hmm. and when you actually see it, can you be open-minded enough to be like, oh, it's not this, but it's this thing instead? Like, Lakers and Clippers are really good, man. That's the series right there that I see those two teams on a different level. Mm-hmm. So forgive me for making that more serious. I'm not taking too many cracks at the Clippers right now. Like, we're going to be, two gunslingers at the end of the season staring each other down. I think that's how the season ends.
The complication here, or the aspect of the conversation that needs to be brought up here, is that Kawhi Leonard literally is dealing with something that he's working his way back from. That quad apparently isn't 100%. The knee apparently isn't 100%. So if there's actually a malady that we're talking about, then this isn't even a conversation that we should have, right? Now, if we are skeptical about, you know, those maladies, which I don't see a reason to be, but let's just head down that path. If we're skeptical about those maladies, and you are painting yourself as the hard nose, bring your hard hat and sack lunch to the gym every day and work your ass off compared to those sissies and ninnies over there wearing purple and gold, you can't pull this shit. Like, you can't do that.
The Clippers got that rep, right? Yeah. They got that, like, oh, we're the grinders. We're the ones who work hard. We're not
Patrick
about
Beverly's
all that hype.
Snapping at everybody.
Right. We're not all about the hype and whatnot. And like those Lakers are across town, those posers, right? Can you tell me who's been playing harder at the beginning of this season?
Yeah, with the Clippers specifically, that was my gripe. My problem with, like, the way this conversation is going right now, the two sides are so far apart on this issue that I don't think the conversation is being held between people who disagree with any kind of intellectual honesty.
What's the primary issue that's being debated in the first place?
Well, so it's the balance between the NBA being a sport that is in a form of entertainment, and yet at the end of the day, it's a competition. So what you have right now is fans who are pissed because superstars are sitting games that they paid big money for, right? Or TV producers being pissed because they paid all this money for the NBA, for those games, for the live broadcasts of those games between superstars. You have that side of this equation, and you have the teams that are doing what's best for those teams, right? And I think the problem is that both sides want their cake and they want to be able to eat it too, right? The NBA side of this, the teams, players want to be paid as if they played in 82 games, right? Superstars especially want to be paid as if they played in all 82 games. Owners want a return on all 82 games. Neither of those sides are interested in giving up games because that means the revenue that they the pie shrinks because there's less revenue from fewer games. And then fans, well, and TV partners, TV partners especially, they want those guys healthy for those big games, and they want to be able to watch those. Like, it is a bummer that we're going to miss, or we missed out on one of potentially only two matchups between Kawhi Leonard and Giannis this year. Right? That's a bummer. Mm-hmm. That sucks. Mm-hmm. But let's say those teams meet in the finals. You want those guys fully healthy there. So that's the cake. You want to be able to eat it too. And I think both sides of this conversation are way too stubborn on their side.
How come baseball can do this? Like, baseball, you'll see your star guy. They play
3,000 games.
They play twice as many games as the NBA does, right? And it happens twice as often that you'll see guys getting load managed, which is a term that just popped up last year for some reason. Like, why is it okay for baseball to do that, but it's not okay for a team to get through 82 games on the season, a team that knows they're going to the playoffs, and get to where they want to go? Like, Dave Roberts sitting Cody Bellinger for a night here and there. Like, no one bats an eye at that.
Yeah, I think that's because that's more built into the fabric of the sport, and because they play so many games. I think that's kind of what's going on there. Also, I think people care about NBA superstars exponentially more than they care about MLB superstars nowadays.
That's true.
I think, you know, like if Aaron Rodgers was to be sat against the Dallas Cowboys on a Monday Night Football game while he's healthy, I think people would be pissed, right? People would probably be pretty angry about that. It's because people care about Aaron Rodgers.
Well, and
people,
there's one-tenth of the games. There's, you know, 16 instead of 162. That's like a 10-game losing streak right there.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think that needs to be pointed. Look, that's kind of the bed, by the way, that the NBA made for itself. Like, they market these superstars. The league is built off of the idea of a superstar. And when those superstars sit while they're healthy, the league is, you know, I don't know. I don't think the league is capable of dealing with that. They have made their name too singularly focused on those superstars, especially big market superstars.
I don't think one game on November 6th is going to matter in the grand scheme of things. Like, yes, they're super dependent on superstars. You're absolutely right. But one out of 82, I just don't think it matters that much.
Yeah, the only thing that, and again, bothered me, I don't know if it's necessarily the right way or the right word to use here. The thing that was a bummer to me was we missed out on Kawhi versus Giannis. That, we have these two guys, Kawhi is at the peak of his powers. Giannis is still finding his way, and he's making his way towards the peak of his powers. We could have had those, and they were healthy, quote, you know, healthy-ish, healthy enough, technically. Like, it sucks that we might have missed out on one of those matchups, and if they don't meet in the finals, we missed out on half of those matchups on the year between those two guys. That's where I'm coming from, and I don't hold it against fans for feeling that way. I also, by the way, don't hold it against the Clippers for saying, we know what we're playing for, and it is not a random game in November.
You said it right there.
So that's kind of where we find ourselves. That is not where we were going to spend the first segment.
Hey, you know, this is a good conversation. I had my first day today with my brother working for me.
Yeah.
Right. And we just had like a writer's segment. We're like eating, drinking, having a good old time, and just getting the juices flowing. We're going to do this once a week where we just talk shit about basketball. Yeah. Just like all the people who I respect and whatnot. Like, I hope you can make it up one of these. I know it's a long drive for you, but let's just like have these meetings and
I'm down,
you know, and philosophize.
Yeah. I'm down for that. I'm down for, I just love talking basketball. I really honestly do. We're so fucking lucky. Anywho, let's take a quick second. When we come back, the actual first segment was going to be about Kyle Kuzma. Mark Stein of the New York Times kind of threw out there that the Lakers are thinking about starting Kyle Kuzma. So I think there are a few angles to this. There is the angle of the basketball aspect of this, and then there's the off-court stuff. What what might be leading to this conversation. We know Frank Vogel isn't in the usual spot that a head coach is in. He has even less power than most NBA head coaches do. So I want to talk about all of that. And then in the third segment, we have a couple questions. One especially good one that I really, really want to get to. So the third segment, we'll focus on a couple of those questions here to send you guys into the weekend. But before we get to any of that, today's show is brought to you in part by MyBookie. Head on over to mybookie.ag to bet on games and get your winnings as quickly as you possibly can. Today's MyBookie bet, we are going to focus here on the Miami and Lakers game that will be going on tonight by the time you guys are listening to this. The Lakers are playing at home. They are giving up 8.5 points to the Miami Heat. Pete, you have your entertainment purposes cash on the side here. Which way are you leaning on in that game?
I'd actually go with Miami on that. I would never actually bet against the Lakers, but the first game back from a road trip, this is one of those like NBA tropes where it's like, you know, old wives tales, like first game back from a road trip at home.
Last game on the road trip, the first game back home.
First game back. Because the last game of the road trip, you have ended the road trip instead of thinking about ending the road trip in the game, right? Like you're like already on the plane back home. And in that first game, you're getting reaccustomed to like, oh, this is my space. And it's just a different mindset being at home. Like on the road, the guys are just traveling with each other. Just think of their experience, right? Put yourself in their shoes. Mm-hmm. They're traveling with each other. When you're home, you're going home to your wife and kids, your family, the things that you normally do. It's just a different environment. Always takes teams a little bit of time to adjust to that. And with Miami, you've got a team that plays really hard. They're pretty good. Got, you know, that Nun kid is really good. So 8.5 is a little bit steep, especially for this team that has a tendency to kind of fuck around.
I'd be interested to see the money line on Miami because I might bet them to win outright. If the money line
look
is
at
okay.
You betting against the Lakers.
It won't shock anybody who listens to the show.
Like I said last show, you're just bursting with it. Just hate is just seeping through your veins and you're trying to dab it up with a fucking paper towel, but you know, it's just coming through. You just need to get it out.
No, I just want to make paper. Screw paper towels. I just want to make paper. But if you guys are looking to make that bet, head on over to mybookie.ag. Use a promo code LOCKEDONNBA. If you guys are first-time users, you can double your cash input there as well. Again, that's mybookie.ag. MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. I was kind of hoping that you would bet the Lakers and we could have one of our bets. So what we're going to do for as long as MyBookie wants to continue the show in our efforts to support MyBookie, we are going to, if we come down on opposite sides of these bets on days that Pete is on the show, he and I will put something down. We'll figure out something. We can either tally up bets or wins at the end of the month or whatever. But we're going to figure that out over the course of the season.
Look at us with the brand integration. We're grown-up podcaster people. Look at us.
I told you I dressed up like a professional for Halloween. All right, so let's get back to the actual topic that we were going to lead the show with. Kyle Kuzma, according to Mark Stein, or people that spoke to Mark Stein, it was kind of loosely reported. It wasn't like it wasn't as concrete as it would normally be, but he basically alluded to throughout there the idea that Kyle Kuzma might be starting as he ramps back up. Pete, what do you think of the concept? Let's just start strictly basketball. Do you think it could work?
If AD's down to do it, I'd love that, man. Om Young-Misuk from ESPN recently said that AD is kind of warming up to that starting five type of role. You know, they want to get off to better starts than they've been getting off to. Part of it is that they know they're really good. And so they're, you know, part of that's like a feeling the other team out. Part of it's a, oh, we'll just try when we have to type of thing. But they they can't continue to get off to these early start. Like, this is going to bite us one of these days very soon. Miami, this is part of why I'm concerned about the Miami and Toronto game right after that, is that both teams, like, if you fuck around the way that they have been the last few games and be like, oh, we'll come back from that 15-point deficit in the third quarter, it's not going to happen against Miami and Toronto. They're not going to mentally fall apart the way that a young Bulls team, Memphis, Charlotte, those teams are full of kids. That's what they're going to do when they get rolled by LeBron and Anthony Davis. Miami and Toronto, they're going to lose one of those games if they play like this.
We have literally heard, like you said, kids or younger NBA players say that they were not starstruck, but kind of taken aback by watching LeBron and Davis out there on the same team, on the same court at the same time. I don't think we're going to get that similar quote from Jimmy Butler.
Right.
I don't think he's going to be as blown away by it. If anything, he's going to see that as a challenge, right? He had that quote, and I love it when NBA players do this. He said something along the lines of, like, people thought I wasn't a good basketball player anymore. It's like, Jimmy, nobody thinks you're not a good basketball player.
So we were talking about this exact topic in our little meeting that we're going to do once a week, is guys like, so one of my theories is that, like, the Lakers have a lot of guys who are talented and have something to prove. And, like, you've seen LeBron with his washed king type thing and all that.
People found an old tweet of mine. Have you seen that?
No. What happened?
After LeBron got stuffed by Mario Hezonja to win or lose the game, I tweeted, literally, LeBron looks washed, man.
Oh, Jesus. So, yes, LeBron is playing to shut you up this year.
You're all welcome.
You remember Michael Jordan's Hall of Fame speech?
Yes. Yeah, he's a psychopath.
Right, but what was it full of? Imagined enemies.
Yeah.
Imagined slights throughout his career. And I showed all you MFers that I was the greatest of all time.
Everybody's back to, like, we all believed in you.
Bro, I want LeBron to think that everybody thinks he's washed. Well, the more he thinks that, the better for us. Because he's come out with bad intentions to start this season, and that's very good for us.
Yeah. I guess as they were kind of meeting up in the locker room after last game, Davis was kind of giving LeBron a hard time over being washed and stuff. And it would be funny if, like, you walk into LeBron's office and there's at Anthony Irwin LA.
Oh, yeah. LeBron, he's got, like, looks stuff washed. Printed out. Like,
do you ever watch NBA Desktop with Network? Oh, well, it's tremendous. It's really good stuff. But he does this show in, like, what looks like a cubicle, and he has, you know, like, tweets printed out and memes and stuff all over him, all over the background behind him. And I could just picture, like, LeBron having a giant printed out version of my tweet. That would make my life. I would retire.
It would make you perhaps more important than either of us are, but I'm not sure if we're the people that are motivating LeBron, but let's pretend. Sounds
fun. I'll take it. To get back to the subject at hand here, let's say Kuzma is starting, but Davis isn't sliding down to the five.
How would that work?
That's my question. Because, all right, I would like to believe that Davis is more open, or, you know, I would like to believe Young Misook's report that Davis is more open to this and that he would slide down to the five. I would love to believe that, just like I would have loved to believe that LeBron last year was going to play the five. But let's say that isn't the case, and Anthony Davis isn't actually open to that, and he remains at the four, LeBron remains at the three, and I guess that means Kuzma plays the two, and you now have to choose between Avery Bradley and Danny Green as his backcourt mate?
Like, I think Kuz could play the two, but I think you have to have a Rondo at the one. I think you have to have an actual ball handler at the one spot.
So they're going to start...
Oh, God. No. I think it's more likely JaVale goes out of the lineup. Like, nothing else really makes sense. Mm-hmm. And to give Vogel credit, there have been very few, like, what Vogel's doing doesn't make sense right now. Like, I haven't agreed with everything that he's done, mm-hmm. but there's been very little in the way of,
he, like, said.
What in the world? Hey, that's you. He's buttering everybody up in the media. Mm-hmm. He knows the game. This is the third time he's been an NBA head coach. He's not going to say shit that stirs the pot. So, like, that I don't even count that stuff. But Vogel knows what he's doing when it comes to those types of things. And he's had very few on-court issues where I've been like, what in the world is he even thinking right there?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the point to make. That's the point to point to here, the thing to point to. I also know that these circumstances, he has even less power than most head coaches usually do. And, you know, if the front office comes to Frank Vogel and says, you have to start Kyle Kuzma, his immediate response would probably be, okay, cool. So, like, Davis is fine with sliding down to the five. No, he doesn't really want to play the five.
Can I divert this real quick?
Go for it.
I want to talk about Vogel. The people I've been talking to with the Lakers have been very like, this team really likes each other. And I'm like, oh, well, what about Vogel, right? He's the outsider, Jason Kidd, backstabber, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
They're like, no, they like Vogel. And it's like, what's the story there? Vogel's a basketball geek.
Yeah.
That's what all these dudes have in common. And that is the area in which there can be respect built from a LeBron, from Anthony Davis, from Rondo and Bradley, the guys who are veterans, who are respected veterans, regardless of what you think of their game. Like a guy like Rondo, Rondo is respected deeply in the locker room. He's one of the leaders of the team. Mm-hmm. And guys like him and guys like Vogel can meet up in that place of like, well, we're all basketball nerds and we can really geek out on basketball. Jason Kidd, Lionel Hollins, guys like that, they fit into this description too. Mm-hmm. So I don't entirely think that the whole Vogel is a patsy that's ready to get stabbed in the back at any particular point. As likely as that may have seemed going into the year, I'm not entirely sure that that's what's happening.
I hope so. I do. I'm just too big a cynic at this point. You know,
the Lakers have earned that from us, man.
Yeah.
They've earned that.
Yeah. And look, as with every time I worry, all of my criticisms, all of my concerns, every time I say this, the caveat is always, I hope I'm wrong. I hope Vogel does prove me wrong. I hope Davis proves me wrong and he actually does slide down to the five, because that would be great to start with that lineup. That would be a tremendous starting lineup. We just talked about it last night about how I would like for them to occasionally come out and punch a team in the face. Like, that would be great. Mm-hmm. And that's how you do it with that lineup. So I hope that's the case. I just, as of right now, I'm skeptical because of the way the last 7 years of my covering this team have gone.
I get it.
And until I'm proven wrong, and when I'm proven wrong, just like you and I have been proven wrong on Dwight Howard, guess what we're going
to
do?
We're going to party.
Exactly. I would love to be proven wrong as I was proven hilariously wrong on this Dwight Howard front. It's just, it needs to happen first.
I think this team is the real deal, Anthony. And yeah. I've been hurt too. I haven't been covering the team as long as you have.
Yeah.
But I've been deeply wounded by the Lakers, and I know exactly what you're talking about. I think this team's the real deal.
I hope so. That would be great. Man, could you imagine covering a championship Lakers team? Fuck yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah. I'm like, I got visions dancing in my head.
Yeah. I just want to, if they win the championship, please, like, actually build that parade stage again and bring back Mark Mattson if he wants to dance and stuff. But remember the last couple parades they did? It was literally just a parade. They never stopped. They never gave, like, speeches or anything like that.
Well, they went to the Coliseum, at least in the one in 2009.
The first one? Yeah.
Yeah. I was there. That was dope because it was packed.
They brought the floor out.
95,000 people. Yeah, that was awesome. I'll never forget that day.
Yeah, but the second one, they just kind of like went through the city and then it was over. It was kind of anticlimactic. Mm-hmm. Look at me. I even have my criticisms.
You bitch about the fucking parade. That says it all right there, Anthony. Jesus.
All right, let's take a second when we come back. So the question that we have coming in, and it's a fascinating one, and it's from Kodama78. They basically want to know if the Lakers would be better with pre-injury DeMarcus Cousins or this version of Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard.
Well, all right, there goes the tease.
Sorry. Just keep it in. Just keep it in.
No, we're already rolling again. We're back. I wanted
you're counting me back down. 3, 2.
I just here's the big tease. There's the answer. All right.
Yeah. I'm not always good at this.
Our debuts on ESPN Radio are going to be tremendous.
Oh God! Can you imagine if you and I ever like have a conventional radio show? Like we're getting fired within the first week, or we're like driving a producer to self harm.
Yeah. Yeah. Greg Bergman, if he ever like produced our show, he would just that'd be it. It'd be over for everything about him. All right. So the question again was whether the Lakers would be better with this version of Dwight Howard or pre-injury or the conceptualized DeMarcus Cousins. Because the thing, kind of the disclaimer here or the caveat that you have to make is, well, would DeMarcus Cousins have held up? Because he got hurt on a non-contact play in a YMCA game, basically.
Let's pretend that for the sake of the hypothetical, that DeMarcus Cousins is indestructible.
Okay. So under this hypothetical, you still think this Dwight Howard would have been better for the team than DeMarcus Cousins would have been?
Dwight is playing at a star level. It's like he's our Draymond. Mm-hmm. That is the defensive impact. He's not scoring a ton, but he's in terms of actually contributing to winning basketball games. I don't know what his RPM and BPM and PIPM, all of which are valid. I'm not saying they're, but like that dude's helping the Lakers win games. Can we agree on that?
Yeah,
at least
absolutely.
Like those of us who watch game to game, it's like, oh yeah, there's another run with Dwight like kicking ass on every play. So yeah, like Boogie, the types of things that Boogie does well kind of overlaps a little bit with AD and LeBron because he's more of a scorer. Boogie cannot take over a game defensively the same way that Dwight has.
Yeah.
I guess that's the simplest way of putting it. Mm-hmm. And that's why like Dwight is providing something that we need while LeBron's taking over some games. AD's taking over other games on the offensive end and the defensive end with AD. Like LeBron is doing that too, but like Dwight can dominate defensively in a way that Boogie can't.
Yeah, if we're using hindsight here, the best version of the team would be cutting JaVale, having Dwight, and having Boogie. Like that's sure. That's the if we really want to go full into being able to use hindsight here. I do think I would have liked to seen the Lakers spacing with DeMarcus Cousins. That's something that, you know, they still kind of miss from the five spot. And it's something that, frankly, I would like to see them maybe address over the course of the season. Not with Mike Muscala, though, please, for the love of God. Not with Mike Muscala. But yeah, other than that, I agree with you. Nobody could have envisioned this version of Dwight. Like, not a single soul. Not even, like, Dwight's loved ones would have predicted this version of Dwight.
Let's not say it too loud. It might scare it away. Because yeah. This is a game changer. Like, that type of thing, if that's an 82 game and into the playoff thing, that's a game changer. There are going to be some series in the playoffs where he's more valuable than others. But just having that type of dude who can take over a game defensively on top of another type of dude who could take a game over defensively in AD, and then like LeBron's amazing when he wants to be. That's a lot on defense, man.
Yeah.
Better hit your threes. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah, amen. Absolutely. It's been amazing to watch. I'm not even kidding. This has been the best story in the NBA this year. Dwight Howard is like pretty easily, and like you can. I'm about to host Locked On NBA here in a couple hours, and I'll say it to Adam, and I'll shout it from the mountaintops. Dwight has been the best story in the NBA, and I don't know what like the close second place would be.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back here. I kind of skipped around because I really enjoyed that question. But CJ Mendenhall writes, "Hey guys, I've been listening daily for about a year, so I decided to go way back and listen to Anthony and Harrison reacting to Kobe's 60-point finale. Boy, the waterworks were out for that one. Man, I miss the Kobe days. Anyways, my question. I've noticed when the game is on the line, they consistently post up Davis over and over again while everyone stands watching. Drives me crazy. Me too. Luckily, they've won these games, but I think it would be more effective to see some more ball movement, running plays, etc. Why go to a mid-range AD fadeaway over and over again with the game on the line?"
That's a really good question that I think there's a deeper level to that the listener may not be considering. Mm-hmm. When I think of the LeBron and Anthony Davis dynamic, I think they're going to be closer than most because they share the same agency, which I don't think people understand the degree to which you're close with the other guys in your agency. Like that's its own team and own brotherhood in and of itself. So they have that. Anthony Davis has always really looked up to LeBron. Mm-hmm. I think I don't know either of them well enough to know that this is true, but my perception is that there is a very fond big brother, little brother dynamic there. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that Anthony Davis is lacking is that killer instinct that I'm going to take over and you cannot stop me
every night.
Like when I want to push my foot on the gas pedal, like he will take advantage and he'll have some of the craziest stat lines you've ever seen.
Yeah. 40-20.
But I think people understand what I mean when mm-hmm. I say that, like, give me the ball, get the F out of my way and let me go to work. I think LeBron is trying to pass that down to AD or trying to teach him that.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, if these games were playoff games, this wouldn't be let's throw the ball into the post so AD can shoot a follow-away 12-footer for the third time in a row, which is what this listener is seeing and frustrated by, and I am too. I think LeBron is trying to teach him what he knows because nobody has been a high level player for as long as LeBron has been. We talk about the GOAT conversations and all that, but LeBron has more to pass down to AD than anybody could.
I don't have anything to add to that answer, just to build on it. It's basically the difference between looking at these on a game-by-game basis and understanding that this team has higher goals than beating the Dallas Mavericks on October or whatever, November, whatever it was that the Lakers played Dallas, right? As maddening as it is to watch that, LeBron has higher goals than any random regular season game or even a collection of regular season games. Like, they've risked losing them by going about the end of the game this way, but it's worth the risk if it gets Davis to assume a little bit more of that dominant big man mentality.
Yes, that's exactly where I'm going with that, mm-hmm. is that is the fruits of these early season. And then, you know, it's conversations between LeBron and AD on the bench discussing how to, maybe I'm writing fan fiction right now and none of this is happening, right? But that is, at least that's the good version of why we would be doing this.
Yeah, the non-charitable version of this is teams take, I mean, this has been a trend in the NBA for about as long as it's been played, right? As long as you and I have been paying attention to it, that for whatever reason, in the fourth quarter, teams send their offensive systems back to the dark ages, and it becomes ISO ball, it becomes hero ball, it becomes all these things that a lot of these teams aren't predicated upon, but they still go back to that because at the end of the day, you want to get a shot up, and if you give the ball to Davis, at the very least, you know he's probably going to get a shot up in those spots.
That's true, and I would argue that this Lakers team, maybe not others, but this Lakers team is predicated on that.
Yeah, some
on your star is going to work. Y'all better knock down open shots when they send that extra guy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right, Matt from Dallas Fort Worth. Thanks, Anthony. As a Las Cruces native and lifelong Lakers fan, it's good to see an El Paso boy make good. Hey.
Nice.
I rep Chooks. You and Pete offer great analysis, and I appreciate your different perspectives. My question for you and Pete, to look at the current roster and the desire for cap flexibility in the summer of 2022, as well as available exemptions next year, and predict what the team can reasonably add next summer to continue to compete. Also, analyze Jason Tatum's shot selection from time to time as I need the amusement. Did you see the other? I think the other game he like didn't miss a 2-point shot, but didn't make a 3-point shot.
Are you sure it wasn't the other way around?
I'm pretty sure. No, I think it was that way, which was like, there was no lamer headline in the offseason than that whole, like, Jason Tatum has been demombified.
It's, It's such like shameless fishing for clicks.
Yeah.
Like
fishing for reaction and yeah.
Well, yeah, you pulled Kobe into it to piss off Laker fans and get more eyeballs on your piece.
Right.
It's fucking weak.
Yeah. But let's just simplify the team building aspect of this question down to the Lakers will have a taxpayer exemption next year, right? They'll be able to they'll be able to spend about $8 or $9 million. Mm-hmm. Do you think, without getting into specifics of what players might be available at that rate, do you think they can add a player who can take this team to the next level with that kind of a chip?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I've been saying for ages they need a guard. Mm-hmm. It's my biggest worry that that's the thing that's going to take us down. And again, I've adjusted my thinking like, oh, this Laker team is really good. Yeah. So with that in mind, even with that in mind, that's my big concern. That's the like, oh, this is the thing that can knock us out. And the Lakers are so good in like the LeBron AD respect that they've got so much talent that works together that in 99% of cases, I would be like, you need a guard and you need a really high end type of guard.
Yeah.
Like with the Lakers, if you told me like Darren Collison is coming out of retirement tomorrow, mm-hmm. I'd throw a party and mm-hmm. he wants to sign with the Lakers. It doesn't have to be somebody who's an all-star caliber guard. Just yeah. somebody who's like
can able dribble.
To dribble and is not Rajon Rondo.
Yeah.
Like do not be terrible at everything else, basically.
Yeah.
And like, I think we'd be good. Yeah. So give me like a solid starter. And I think you can get that with that $8-9 million mid-level exception.
Yeah, I agree. Last couple questions here. So first, Nick from upstate New York writes, love the show. Hate when you're not on for the weekends. I have some balls in the air. We'll figure that out over the course of the season. That's my shameless tease there. Don't ruin the tease, Pete.
Okay. Oh, it was so subtle there. What could you have been talking about?
You never know. My question is, why does a LeBron-led team always start so slow? We kind of hit on this already, so I'll just answer this. We'll get to the next question. But it's because he understands that his race is longer than most NBA players' races.
Right. That's a good way of putting it, especially when you think of it more than just one season.
Yeah, I think LeBron at this stage of his career knows that usually last year is being the exception. He's going to the playoffs. So he's trying to figure out what's the bare minimum energy that I can put out to get my team to the playoffs and have enough left in the tank to dominate the way that I usually have to dominate in that kind of a setting. And I think to extend that out to the rest of the team, his teams go as he goes, not just from the standpoint of like his production, but also the energy that he puts out there. Everybody kind of picks their game up if he goes into God mode. They also kind of slack back in their chairs if it's very evident, if it's clear that he's just kind of getting through this game and getting ready to the next one.
Yeah. No, that's it exactly right there.
Yep. All right. Last question. We already answered that one. Mystic Tortoise YT writes, love the podcast. Analysis on the Lakers doesn't get any better than this. Thank you, Anthony and Pete, for making my hellish commute on the 405 bearable. Well, oh, this is the one. All right, there we go. That was just a compliment. Thank you for the compliment. So we talked the other day about Chick Hearn screwing up Shaq's name.
Yes.
This person.
Oh, did he have it?
This person has it as Chenille O'Quill.
Oh, I don't remember that. I feel like I would have remembered that.
That's pretty far off. I'm almost positive it's like Shaquilio. Like, I'm not.
So he would call him Shaq O'Neal, which he was like the only person to call him that. I don't remember. Maybe that was, I'm confusing that, but he would always just be just a little bit off.
Yeah.
That was the thing. And like, nobody had the heart to be like, well, actually Stu, or actually Chick. Yeah. Stu's not doing that.
Yeah. I distinctly remember one time Derek Fisher was stepping to the line and Chick. And the thing with like free throws is that there's nothing else going on. And all you can hear is the commentary. And Chick was like, all right, now Shaq steps to the line. And I was like, oh no, Chick.
So that's, I want to give the listeners a little bit of homework.
Yeah. Go back and
look up on YouTube and just Google Chick Hearn.
Yeah.
And just listen. There are a few compilations there. in the LFR pod, I do that with the intro and the outro because that's my guys, Jake and whatnot. But it can't possibly do the whole thing justice. There are a couple of compilations out there, 6 or 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
Just listen to Chick talk shit. This was the Lakers GOAT media guy and always will be.
Just the Lakers one, by the way.
Because he was honest.
Yeah.
And that's one of the big things that I've taken from him. My style is different than his, but Chick told you what he really thought. So please humor me and give that a listen and spend 6 minutes cracking up and just Chick just talking shit. And sometimes it was about the Lakers because they were playing like crap.
Right. That was my favorite aspect of Chick's calls. It's going to shock people that my favorite aspect of Chick calling the Laker games was him criticizing the Lakers. My favorite Chick clip ever is there's a game between the Lakers and the Kings, and the Lakers open up the first quarter like 44-1 or something like that.
It was 40-4.
40-4.
87-86. So, I'm going to look that up right now. Keep talking. So
during the game in the first quarter, the Lakers were on one of their like multiple 20-0 runs or whatever it was, and it was like 16 or 17-0. And Chick is yelling down at the Sacramento bench, call a timeout, coach.
Talking shit.
You got it. Get somebody else in the game. This is a mess.
He's like, call 911. He's like, yeah, no, he's just talking big shit to the opponent. I just texted you. Yeah. Oh, no, I sent that to Jeannie. Let me text this to you.
I just texted you this game.
Yes, no, everyone should watch it. I should text it to everyone.
He put it in the refrigerator in the first quarter.
Yeah, it was 40-4. So this is part one of two. I got to send you the other one. Anyhow, carry on.
Well, that was just I don't have much to add on top of that. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The thing that separated Chick, frankly, from the way a lot of local play-by-play guys handle their business now, is that Chick had no problem whatsoever calling out the Lakers, and a lot of teams, the Lakers included, they don't want criticism over their airwaves about that team. And I just think it makes for a better broadcast when they are allowed. And Stu, I think, stands out among color commentators now because he's willing to say, oh, these guys are end of the road trip, sleepwalking,
I'm curious about Stu this year because, like, I don't know. We don't really talk about this, and I don't want to criticize another. Stu's been checked out the last few years. Can we be honest? Like, when we watch the games, he's like, I fucking hate watching this team lose. the team, how many championships I've watched. I got to watch these dumbasses.
Well, the last six or 7 years, I don't blame him for checking out.
For sure. I don't blame him either. Yeah. What I'm saying is it's going to be interesting. This is the thing that I'm keeping an eye on is does Stu like fall back in love with this?
Yeah.
Cause that would be really cool.
Yeah. I mean, every off season for the last, like, I don't know how many off seasons, there was always like the, is Stu returning? Isn't he returning? Mm-hmm. All those things. I kind of wonder if the season goes as you and I seem to think it might go, will we not get those whispers next year or will he just retire? Like, will he say, all right, I got my last championship. I got to watch my last championship up front and that'll do it for me. Whenever he does go, like, that's like our childhood. The chicken stew. Remember it was like Chicky Baby and Sweet Stew when they made them both NBA players and they gave them like NBA player nicknames.
Little cartoon.
Yeah, it was incredible. We're blessed, man. We're blessed rooting for this team and with the voices that we've been able to enjoy with the Lakers, with Chick Hearn, Vin Scully, with the Dodgers, all that stuff. Hopefully we can add to that stuff. That was a really fun show. Really fun game ahead of us. Miami is a good team, and they're going to play hard, so it's going to be interesting to see if the Lakers can get up for that the way that they're going to have to get up for it. We have a couple more games over the course of the weekend. If you have questions, get them in the form of a 5-star iTunes review. I am finally up to date on those, as I have to be. So for now, though, have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you on Monday.